I unsubscribe from my own podcast for a kid. You know what that's like?
It's painful.
Yeah.
It's
painful. I mean, not as painful as listening to it, obviously.
Yeah.
I had
some trade-offs there.
I guess we can go ahead and we can introduce ourselves since we have at least one new person.
Yeah.
And, we got Jason.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and introduce myself. My name is Jason Black. I am a software developer from Mobility Labs based out in Denver.
So what do you do? What do you primarily write in?
So primarily I've been writing in doing Ruby on Rails projects. I've been doing some Python as well for the Mobility Labs as well.
You're a big fan of Python, right?
Huge fan, yeah.
Yeah, I remember, I don't want to reveal some of the story of what
mm-hmm.
we're going into, but
mm-hmm.
I'll bring up this point later.
Okay.
My name is Rick Metzger. I'm a graphic designer here at Mobility Labs. As of the moment, I am the graphic designer, and that reflects on my business cards, which I'm going to get printed.
The quality of our design.
That's less important to me. I've been with Mobility for about a year now. OG.
Good work.
So we also have Samit.
Yeah, my name is Samit. I'm a web developer, for Mobility Labs. It's actually, today is the 1 year anniversary.
For you?
Yeah.
Oh,
hi.
April 1st.
Hi.
Seriously?
Yeah, April 1st.
Yeah, because it was kind of like a joke.
Yeah.
today is the 2nd. So
then
you
I
kind
just
of
stayed
like,
on.
It was a really bad April Fool's joke that like I still haven't told him about. So he just keeps working for me, and I keep paying him.
You build a career, and all of a sudden...
Like, Smeet, this was supposed to be a joke.
It was just a very elaborate April Fool's joke.
Very elaborate.
That lasted for months.
Very.
Like, you're waiting for the hammer to drop, and you're like, well, actually, this is kind of like a legitimate company now.
We're pivoting.
We're pivoting from a joke to a real company.
So I am Sean Perkins, the founder of Mobility Labs. And I do anything that these guys need me to and interact with clients.
Cool. So today we're coming from the DC office from Mobility Labs. But what we're going to be talking about is that this past weekend, we were in New York for Startup Weekend, Startup Weekend EDU specifically. And I know... For a couple of us, we've done this before. Some of us have done hackathons before, and then some of us have never participated in a hackathon, much less a startup weekend before. So I think we're going to talk about some of our experiences kind of leading in. So this would be my third startup weekend, but this is the first one for EDU that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done a couple, right?
Yeah, I think this was my second or third startup weekend and probably like fifth or sixth hackathon, maybe more.
Yeah, I've done a couple other hackathons, like official hackathons, and then because we did hackathingy last year, like with just our friends.
Oh right, I don't think I participated in that though.
You were there, weren't you?
Was
you
I?
There. Yeah, because we were here in the WeWork Chinatown office because you literally just got here.
Yes.
Literally had just jumped
okay.
ship from Affinity.
True. I remember now. Yes, we're counting that. But this was Jason's first time doing a hackathon or a startup weekend. So what did you think, Jason?
It was actually pretty fun. Getting a whole bunch of people together with such a diverse background in programming and business experience and education and knowledge, with this especially, it was pretty interesting to see the dynamic in there. And how we took a raw idea and turned it into something presentable. That was really, really enjoyable. I had a good time with it.
Oh yeah, one quick note on format. If you're not familiar with either Startup Weekend or Hackathon, which likely you're not, well, maybe if you listen to this podcast, you are. Maybe you're familiar with the idea of hackathons. I think most people in the common population know. Like whenever I say it, it's like, are you hacking things? Are you? Did you use the password swordfish to get in?
It's always swordfish. Always swordfish.
Either that or password 1234. But what a hackathon is in general is basically where a bunch of people get together and they very quickly build something. I think the term originated from Facebook's hackathons they do internally. Like I think actually the chat functionality was developed at a hackathon.
Yes.
Back when the company was like kind of first like coming together. But a specifically startup weekend is a hackathon where you come together for 3 days, so Friday night and Saturday and Sunday, and you either bring a team with you or you meet people there. Everyone pitches an idea, and then teams kind of naturally form around the strength of those pitches, and then you have the remaining 2 days to research, to design, and to build
a business. Because you're not just building
not
an
just
application,
a product.
But you're actually trying to validate the idea and see if there's something to it, even beyond what you can actually build during startup weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And then you pitch usually before a panel of judges, which normally consists of some sort of either investors or industry experts. In our instance, it was a couple people representing accelerators and then some industry experts in the field of education who had worked with, the NY Department of Education's Innovation Office. I think that was one lady that was there. I forget the other, but she also, I think, worked in the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing we should mention about Jason and his team before we go too much farther is that even though it was his first time...
Wait, spoilers. We want to build up to that.
Okay, we'll keep it a secret.
As if they don't know what it is.
As everybody skips ahead to 30 minutes in, seriously, what were they talking about?
Don't worry, the build up will be good.
Okay.
And what about you, Sumit? You've done hackathons before, which you never did start.
Right, yeah, not the business-focused kind of deal, where it's, you're coming up with, more outside-in development rather than inside-out.
How does it compare? Did you like the format here, or did you prefer we're in an environment where you're just kind of building rather than doing that? What would you call it? Would you say outside in versus inside out?
Yeah, I personally like the inside out where you're developing an app. It kind of borrows you're always going outside in, but not too far out, right? You're not, looking to build an iPad and you come out with a Palm Pilot or something, where if you're building, if you're building inside out, you start out with a Palm Pilot, but then you're like, okay, I can work on this. We'll get it to the iPad level and whatnot. But yeah, I think to me, the other idea, it becomes more personal, whereas in building outside in, where you're beginning with a grand vision of something, which is good to have always, but I think you always... If you build it the other way as well, you will have that, but it becomes more personal to me, at least. Maybe that's just programming stuff because you're working on it more.
Yeah, maybe when you're building, from an application, or a development, base, and then kind of letting the vision kind of evolve
right
naturally. Maybe then it kind of feels a little more personal,
right?
Rather than, I guess, because you treat the vision, I guess, the same way you would treat doing development or design process, where it's it's just another thing to be worked on, where rather than letting something kind of naturally coalesce.
Right. And you're always pushing up against the what can I actually do in this time,
mm-hmm.
versus this bigger idea. So I think if you come in and you're you say, hey, we're going to build this really cool thing, and we just say, this is what we're going to build because we know we can build it in a weekend. Versus if we say, hey, we have to try to figure out what this bigger vision will be, but there's 0% chance that you're going to be able to build it in a weekend.
Yeah.
And so you end up focusing on other aspects, okay, it needs to be very pretty. We need to make sure that at least the demo functions, but you don't get to really dig into the back end or do some of the other really cool stuff because there's just generally not enough time.
Right.
Yeah. When in my experience, I think I might agree with me. I like these are things I like to do after work, or in my own time is, develop some sort of product or feature or, just an idea and then kind of let I don't know, maybe it's just my personal bias, but I think that the business side of things is for my taste a little boring. I don't know, it's just more exciting to me to get into the nitty gritty of you have an idea which is, in my instance, is often stupid, and then you just you pour a lot of time into building it rather than, I think that leads to necessarily more fun projects. Not necessarily those that are going to be a viable business, but I guess those are different goals.
Right, and I think that's where Startup Weekend really tries to separate itself from some of the other hackathons is that it focuses on creating a business. Like, what do you need to do to create the business? And so they don't rate as highly the like technical achievement. Like, if you build something amazing in a weekend, but they can't see how it's going to turn into a business, chance of you winning is very slim, as we know from from many, many hackathons that Rick and I have done together.
Well, and then the opposite of that is true. So you can have an idea that isn't necessarily well vetted either in design or in development. So it could be completely non-functioning prototype, you know, like everything demoed up like in like PowerPoint or, you know, some other, you know, like sort of presentational application. But if it has like, if they did like great user research and they like really like figured, like nailed like their pitch and how they're going to monetize, those are things that can win you a startup weekend even without having like a single developer on board.
Right.
Yeah.
That was one of the key points that I noticed for this particular weekend. There were a decent number of developer types in the room, but not every team got a developer. So I wouldn't have imagined that the judges would be extremely harsh or come down on, you know, not having a technical working demo. At that point, it kind of sunk in that more or less the concept and the idea was more important than getting the back end right and making sure the interactions were right and all that stuff.
How many development people were on your team?
I'd say, counting myself, about 5. And that
five devs?
Which explains why no one else had any developers.
Well, seeing as there was only like 8 devs that showed up to the event.
Well, so I'm trying to remember the exact numbers of it, but I think it was about 5, including myself.
How many people were on your team?
10 total.
10? Wow.
It was a rather large team.
Giant team.
Yeah. It's funny you mention that too, because at first I was thinking to myself about how difficult it would be to communicate between 10 different people. There's math functions to verify that, but honestly, I didn't feel like doing the math on that. It was too late at night. So the best thing there was to help reduce the number of channels we had to go through. We basically divided it into sub-teams. Say, okay, you guys are going to focus specifically on the business development side. You guys are focus specifically on the research side. You guys specifically focus on development. You can guess which team got that.
The designers?
Well, there were no designers, funnily enough.
Aha!
We did not have any designers on the team.
In your presentation, the design wasn't bad. It looked pretty good. It was a little more illustration-y, kind of cartoony for my personal preference for like the goal of your app. Actually, if you want to talk about that, what was the...
So the app that we created was basically a tool to help students who were basically going to colleges which weren't going to serve them well. Basically, they're what we considered underserved students, going to rather expensive colleges that don't graduate people as often. The main catch there was we had a college counselor, Cesar de la Cruz, and he had been talking to his students for a long time, doing this for a long time, basically telling them, this school is, you know, okay, because, you know, it costs so much money, but this school costs a lot less and you have a better chance of actually graduating. It's got an 85% graduation rate versus the school that costs $40,000 a year and graduates maybe 30% of its students. That's a huge issue with colleges in general, where the cost of admission, the cost of tuition is exorbitantly high, but the likelihood of you graduating is ridiculously low. And especially more so for students that are not well-to-do or can't get grants or scholarships, or basically it's the parent paying for this sort of education. That's a real strain on it. And basically the parent's financial situation decides the child's future. And it happens, but it's not the most desirable situation. So our app was designed to remedy that.
So what was the nitty gritty, like kind of elevator pitch for what the app was itself, like beyond like this idea of like this, the goals of it, like what was it like accomplishing? So like, or what is it the intention of to accomplish? Like,
yeah, basically the intention was to give students that were getting ready to graduate or looking to graduate earlier, what have you, the information they needed to make an informed college choice. So regardless, like whatever major they wanted to go in, whatever field they wanted to go in, we wanted to provide them with the information they needed so they could pick an appropriate college for them and their financial situation. So, And I'm not just talking about financial situation, of course. We're also talking about test scores, SAT scores, and that sort of thing.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So is that, so I imagine, so you're grabbing all this data from the university in terms of, like, their acceptance rate, their graduation rate, like, average, like, cost of tuition. Is that, was this, would this be, like, a curated app in the beginning, or would this be going to be something that you, did you guys already, like, conceptualize, like, how you're going to scrape or pull that information across all those different sources?
Aggregating that sort of information in pretty much any format is going to be a little bit tricky, because not all colleges produce the same amount of information equally. Some information might not line up in terms of what they're what they're publishing necessarily. But for the most part, we were going to basically hand select a handful of these colleges and get their information like that. I am unaware of any API or anything that we could do besides web scraping that would have gotten us this information in a more dynamic way. But in all honesty, it would have basically just been us going to their website or starting a dialogue with that college and saying, hey, we want this information for use in this project. Trust me, it's going to be an awesome project at that point in time. Let's, start the dialogue going.
But some of those colleges have a vested interest in not releasing
I would imagine
those numbers
so.
In that way, right?
Yeah, I would imagine
But if they're public, then I believe they're obligated to release those numbers, right?
Right.
If you're a public institution.
Well, let's say that they are. They don't necessarily have to put them the easiest to read format or easiest to read place
or like,
respond to your email when you say, hey, we'd really like you to be part of this app.
I don't know if this is necessarily like this reflects like the intention of the app, but it's maybe something to consider is. With some schools, there is a problem of, like, grade inflation.
Yes.
So graduation rates are artificially high because, like, this is a particular problem at Harvard. Ranked as the number one school in the world. And that grade inflation, like, the average grade ranking is, like, an A minus, which isn't typical of, like, you might say, oh, they're all, like, well-performing students, but, like,
I've never heard of a curve.
Yeah, I think you raise a pretty good point there on the grade inflation piece because, I mean, this is my personal opinion of it, but grades, they're a good benchmark. They tell you a general, feeling of what this person may know, but not very many people are good test takers. You know, I personally in college didn't like taking tests at all. I mean, I did fairly well on them, but even so, I've known friends and colleagues who've gone on to do great things that would freak out at tests.
Wait, you don't like tests, but then you submit your code to tests?
Okay, so that's
seems, yeah, that seems
that's a really good point. You say you love testing.
No, there's a difference between testing the stuff that you write and taking a test that determines whether or not you're going to pass or fail a class.
You personally don't like taking classes. You don't like taking tests, but you will submit your creations to tests.
Hmm.
Yes.
To whether or not they earn your approval. That seems pretty messed up.
Or circle's approval.
Yeah. Well, so, going back to that, it's basically, my feeling is honestly that like grades are more or less the benchmark. They don't exactly prove that the person knows the stuff. I think that, I really do think, again, this is my personal diatribe, but I do think that there needs to be something better to measure that actual metric of success of what you actually know. And so that's probably a much tougher thing to solve. But
I think that might be like a philosophical discussion in the way as well, because then a grade doesn't necessarily tell you like, I don't know if that might be the intention, is that it's supposed to tell you like how much a student knows. Like, does a student know this? But the reality is a grade, that's not what it tells you. The grade tells you that A, the student knew the subject well enough and was able to complete tests and assignments based on it, was A, able, and like then B, able to like, to put enough of an effort into testing that information. So like you could have a prodigy who is terribly lazy, mm-hmm. and if he like he in his grades it might reflect that he like if he had like a D average, but in terms of like his understanding or like being able to wrap his head around a subject, that is not necessarily reflected in that. But is that necessarily a bad thing as well? Like
right.
So it seemed like the app that you guys built kind of looked at colleges in that same way of not using just a single metric to say whether this is a good fit for a student.
Right.
And actually looking at graduation rate, looking at how much it costs, looking
right.
at the student themselves and what they're interested in and trying to juggle all of that stuff.
That's right.
And come up with a good fit.
It's interesting you mentioned that too, because there's another unspoken of metric that we learned, as a matter of fact, from the field research that we did. So at the same time that this was going on, there was actually a college fair going on at a high school that one of our teammates had worked at. And so we sent a small group over there to investigate, and what we found out was the schools that were actually doing well, you know, that would fit well for the students that we're targeting, weren't at these events. Mm-hmm. They weren't actually going out and trying to recruit the students. They weren't rolling out the red carpet and showing them all kinds of flashy things. What they saw were a lot of, you know, performances and a lot of dances and a lot of sororities, fraternities, basically presenting to, no, this was a girls' school, so it would have been sororities only. So they were basically just showing them a lot of the stuff that, you know, hey, this is, you know, something cool that we do. This is a cool event that we do. You know, we're having fun. We like this school. You should come and join us. Mm-hmm. And in all honesty, I envision that this particular app would go and say, hey, you guys are actually the kind of schools that we want you to be at these events. Come on by. Mm-hmm. That sort of data would be invaluable. And at that point, that's a huge mass marketing opportunity.
Yeah, the ones that are not good at marketing or don't care about traditional marketing like that.
Right. Was that college fair primarily for schools that are considered underserved? Like the schools that would have that 1,000-to-1 counselor to student ratio?
That's a good question. I would say I'm going to give a tentative answer if I'm not 100% sure of that. Okay. I will say that it is, you know, primarily schools that were in the New York, Brooklyn area, mm-hmm. pretty much. And I can't say for, you know, like as I can't say for certain if they were underserved or not, but one would imagine that there are underserved students in that, you know, that school system. So mm-hmm. the likelihood is that they were going to these college fairs and saying, hey, I really want to go to this college, but, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess one way you could do it, like, in the beginning is you could, as the app, you could say, like, just market towards, like, the NYC, like, area, since you're, like, that's where Starter Weekend was. And then you can, since there's less schools in that, you know, in that particular area, then you can focus, like, it could be more editorialized while you're figuring out, instead of, like, building, like, this very complex, like, scraping, you know, like function, like, you know,
yeah.
like, to go and, like, look for everything. You just, like, okay, we'll just focus on this. We can pull a bunch of this data by hand, and then we can see what, like, what metrics are actually, like, valuable to,
right.
like, to users.
Yeah, the intention was never to go after every school out there. It was more or less to just stay local to the NYC school districts and just go from there. Now, that meant the colleges that we might select may go outside of the state, but even so, that's still a small subset of all of the colleges out there in the states.
Right, and the counselor that was on your team seemed to have a good understanding of what those schools were because he's doing that work.
Yes.
On a daily basis with his kids, so.
Yep.
Very cool. What about Sumit and Rick? You guys were on the same team.
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys work on?
Do the pitch.
Okay, I can do the pitch. So we were on a team called Math Matchup. The goal of Math Matchup was to be a platform, starting with math, but originally would go into, the intention would be that it would go into other subjects based on growth. But it was a platform to encourage collaboration as a means of learning in a classroom. That's it. We got to do a new take. The podcast is ruined. No, it's like they people be like, I don't even hear anything. But the intention is to be that it's a platform that uses collaboration to encourage kids to learn and then to incentivize that collaboration. So I thoroughly believe that you learn a lot when you have to teach someone about a particular subject, because it forces you to think about the subject in a way that you may not have thought about before, in order to either to A, ask questions that you hadn't considered or had glossed over, or like there's like a piece of fringe information that you like that you got for the purposes of like accomplishing your goal, but maybe you didn't understand thoroughly enough to explain. I think there's a quote by Einstein that's like, if you can't explain something simply, then you don't understand it well. So what our platform was a means of incentivizing this. So basically, kids would get a math problem as a group, and they would come together to solve it. But the inherent problem with that is if, as many of you know, who have ever been like in a college group class, is that inevitably someone either gets stuck with doing all the work or railroads the project and does all the work themselves. So to combat that, we have to, A, you have to reach a consensus for the students that have to agree on an answer. And then after that, they break back up individually. And then they have an individual math problem, which is like derivative or very similar to the previous problem they received as a group. And then they answer there on their own without any additional help. And then how their team scores individually affects how they score as a team. So you're playing like in teams, you have a team round and an individual round. So kids are incentivized to help the students who don't understand because like otherwise our team will lose points. So like it's not just enough just to submit the right answer. You have to make sure that everyone understands the answer. And there'd also be there's another round where you can come up and have a chance to explain your process so that math is treated more like an art. Math is a beautiful subject, but it's treated with this idea of like just pure memorization and like not solving things creatively like we do with other subjects. So like rather than just like doing something, getting it done, you have to like you implore kids to explore a process and then to act as teachers to their fellow students.
Very cool.
Very cool premise.
So you had a decent sized team also, I believe.
Yes, we had Samit, myself, Candace, who mm-hmm. also works from Billy Labs as a teacher engagement associate. We had, and then three of the people whom we met at Startup Weekend. Huai, who is a math teacher from the NYC area. I believe he was a 10th grade math teacher. There was also Sam. She and her friend Jonathan were in a class together on design thinking. So their background was in UX design. So yeah, it was a pretty decent sized team, 6 people. It worked fairly well. I think some of the pitfalls potentially of like of our group is that we did a big, because of mine and Sam and Jonathan's experience in UX design, we did like a big like kind of like product sprint, very much similar mm-hmm. to like the stuff we're doing now in Mobility Labs. So we defined our user, we defined our client, we defined the problem statement for each of those, and then before all that happened, we did a big like mind map of like potential problems where we broke up individually, put things on postcards, like what's the problem, like what are we actually trying to solve, like what is the problem in math class, and so we spent a lot of time on that, which is good, but I think for the context of like 3 days, in order for us to actually have built something, I think we needed to like feature lock like at least 24 hours before the project, and we didn't feature lock until like 12 hours before, so there at that point there just wasn't enough time, like between like refining the pitch and like meeting with like some of the coaches that were wandering around, there wasn't enough time like with that to actually build anything of like real substance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe if Samik could work faster, but
yeah, it sounds like a development problem.
So, yeah, that sounds like the bottleneck.
I think the main thing there was, yeah, doing that sprint up front. But I wonder if that kind of sprint is more, if we don't know what we're going for. We kind of did, like, kind of agree on, like, what we're going for, right? So it's a game or it's some kind of way to collaborate and do that thing. And then we kind of defined all those, which might be, I think everyone was in agreement. So maybe it's like, hey, if we can all explain something to the same degree that what we're thinking and it all matches up, we don't want to look at this any further. So we were going through, you know, what does collaboration mean and what does, things like that. And it was like very philosophical, I guess.
Those are some deep meta questions.
Right.
Yeah.
There was one coach who came in, he was actually... Jonathan, Sam's coach, and he got to talking about what is collaboration.
Yeah.
And
that's deep.
We'll save
that for another podcast.
It was actually
a word to understand.
Yeah, it was like it was an interesting conversation to have. Like I liked it from just like a pure academic like
mm-hmm.
point of view. Like it was an interesting conversation to have, but I don't know how effective it was in helping the product to move forward.
Right.
I think what we ended up doing is we just said, like, we're just like, all right, well, fine, we'll finish the word to understand it. Because, like, this is the same collaboration.
Right. And there was, like, okay. I think It was good to get that, but at least myself, I always kind of think of those things, right? Like, it's like, he was like, we don't know what collaboration means, and we had like a little step-by-step how this whole process would work. And my whole thing was like, if you can test the inputs to, like, we're giving them this test of like a user or one of the kids gets a test, mm-hmm. and if they have it right, we can safely assume inside that collaboration happened or it didn't happen, or if we can measure it, again. So it was like going into that, but it was very like compact to like this portion of it. But I think the cool thing was that once we started working on like the application itself, a lot of the questions came out that were pertaining to it, right? Like, does every kid have a device, or is it a shared device, or can we do the shared device and things like that? I think that was like more towards closer to the middle of it than the beginning of it. And maybe, yeah, I was thinking like if we can just start building it, and that might just be like my bias because I want to start building something. But to me, a lot of stuff comes out of that, right? Like, a lot of questions are asked. And maybe that's because the way I develop it is like, you're saying we want to do this, or yeah, like, does everyone have a device? Like, can we do it that way? Or if that's not possible, do we do it the other way? So, like, I think it, like, directly, all these strings came out of that. And even, like, not development, because we didn't do too much development, but we kind of, like, started laying out the page, right? Like, it's like, this is the page, and you click on something, and this is what happens. And I think a lot of good questions came out of that, less philosophical and more applicable.
Yeah.
So it was like, this is an immediate step. If we figure this out, we can have an immediate result of it and implement that. Which, yeah, I think might have been, not to be critical of the whole process, because I did learn a lot of like little things that next time I build something, I'll ask those questions, and like maybe to myself, or just like do a quick Google search or something like that to figure out, you know, what does collaboration actually define as, right? So it's like, all right, I'll keep that in the back of my mind, but not the whole focus of everyone's attention to go, what is collaboration?
I think it was really helpful. Those conversations were really helpful in the pitch.
Mm.
Like, if you're promising collaboration, or you're like, we measure collaboration, and someone's like, well, how are you measuring collaboration? It's like, oh, well, it's like, oh, we tested test scores. Like, did you measure collaboration, or did you measure understanding? It's like, or it's like, well, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, both. I was like, we could infer that collaboration happened. Like, yeah, that was, I think that's helpful in the pitch, like, particularly, like, define the problem statement. That really helps with just getting, like, your elevator pitch down. And then if you know who your client is, then you know, like, who you need to, like, be developing your pitch for, because that's the person you're selling to. And then defining your end user is how you're going to define, like, the language inside of the application, you know, or how you're going to, that, because that's, since it's your end user, that's going to be the person who is actually using the application. So, like, a school district might buy it, but the administrator who signs off on this purchase may never use the application. So that's who you need to keep in mind when you're developing the internal part of it.
And it might be that if you have unlimited time and unlimited money, you start at that end. I think
was this like a physics problem, like where you assume like a vacuum with no friction?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
so you start and you're like completely going through, what does this mean, this mean? Yeah.
Well, so the hard part about Startup Weekend is not the knowledge being present. Like, even the lack of designers or other things on your team is never quite the problem. And your guys' team didn't really have that problem because you had designers, developers,
educators,
people who understood the problem. But it's time. And so what you want is to be able to start doing something pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where coming to a Startup Weekend with your idea already kind of figured out,
mm-hmm.
helps a lot, because then if you have the idea well thought out, then you can say, hey, Sumit, start building this with the understanding that these things will change. And then they can start having those conversations, because those conversations have to happen. Like, to Rick's point, like, you need to know that stuff when they start asking you questions, and you need to know that stuff when you start actually selling or building a
I guess product. like there's issue of like spending too much time like doing like this an understanding sprint kind of thing. But the inverse of that, what I'm like, the goal that it's trying to solve is like I think a problem that we probably all encountered, like at least in doing software, is like where you don't have a firm grasp of the understanding, like either between just you or between you and the client, or like neither one of you has like a firm understanding of the problem, and you spend time building stuff only to realize that like a couple weeks later, like, oh no, this isn't what we needed. We actually needed this.
Which happens all the time. I mean, that's why we make the joke that like the customer figures out what they want about halfway through, right? Because that's when they've had enough exposure to all of the problem solving and the things that you're pushing out there, and they've started to give up on the initial idea and start to gravitate towards what the users are actually saying and what people actually want. And then
yeah.
It's like, that's a pretty big change. And it maybe doesn't always come in the middle of the project, but it normally comes a while after the beginning.
I think it's natural. Like if you're at a meeting and you're, so like, let's say if you only have the opportunity as like with your client to meet like, let's say once every 2 weeks, even that I think is ambitious depending on like how big of a project you're doing or how big your client is. Once every 2 weeks, if you meet with them, so that's like when you have like your designer, you have like your
tech,
your field
your,
expert, your tech,
yeah.
Like your PM, whoever, you have all those people inside the room. If as a client, if that's like your only opportunity to speak to the team, like as a whole, like you really want to quickly like ideate and figure shit out in order to like to get moving,
mm-hmm.
And to make decisions. So, but the problem is like moving that quickly, like you don't have time to think about it. So like another like couple weeks passes and like this has been kind of slowly like churning in the back of your head. Maybe you've like talked to like your colleagues about it. You've thought about it more. Like maybe it's like, so if you're like thinking like a search feature now, like when you're using websites and you see a search feature, you're thinking about it more critically rather than just using it. So I think, yeah, that's what happens. Like you're slowly kind of like the gears are turning, and then 2 weeks later, you're like, actually my understanding has changed. It's not, I don't think it's so much like, I think we joke, I mean, I, at least I know I do. We like, I joke that the client like just like changes their mind like willy nilly, and it's more, I think, more like that. It's not they're just changing like with like the direction of the wind. It's more that they've had time to think about it, and their understanding of the problem or what they perceive to be the problem has changed.
I concur with that. I definitely encountered that in my previous venture as well as this weekend. Basically, the idea, yeah, like you said, they're thinking more and more about what this actually means and what this, you know, actually should be and what shape it should take. It's not that they're trying to just change for the sake of change. They're trying to actually get the right beat on it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it happens.
How about the proposal of doing this where one, you're, someone's thinking of the bigger picture, you're thinking of the very small picture, and you kind of meet in the middle.
Well, that's essentially like when you think about how we staff a project, right? Like there's supposed to be some type of project manager or product owner that may be the same person, but is often a different person. Like one person is thinking about the actual product, and another person's thinking how to get things done. And then you have your technology team, your design team, and then maybe
sure.
The business unit.
Yeah, and those are even like more fine grained. So if you start at the top of like, what is the product? And then like your PM is like, it's like, what are the steps to get this done? And then like the dev team is focusing like, oh, we need X and Y feature. And like our like design team like is like, oh, we need like X and Y feature designed. And then biz dev is like, how do we pitch these features to the client and make it a sustainable business?
What if something changes in the middle of that?
The problem
it
is
does. It all,
yeah,
I mean, it,
I think
it
the
does.
Problem is
it
because
breaks.
It's like, because it's top down, you have like, those are all derivative tasks.
Yeah, that's more
well,
like waterfall, right? Like if
yeah.
you, if something changes, you go back.
Well,
no.
So that's more or less, yeah, it's waterfall in the sense
right.
that if something does change at each step, you've got to go back and revalidate.
Right.
But there are other, you know, design methodologies out there like XP where
right.
if something changes, you basically start afresh.
Mm. That's what I was saying, like, if one person, not one person, but like someone's working on the nucleus or a team is working on the nucleus of what it is
yeah.
and someone's working from the outside in, and in the middle you might miss each other. I'm doing a hand motion where you're missing each other.
Oh, crap. This is an audio
yeah.
medium.
But where, that's where you can change, right? They're understanding something different than you're understanding, and then you can kind of match up.
Well, so ideally is to not have to miss each other at all, right? So the ideal situation is that people are working together and that your product owner, your person who really understands what you're building, is working very closely with both the design and the development team. to really express those needs, mm-hmm. and that your project manager is listening to that and then saying, well, you know, I hear the business needs are this. We need it done in a week, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous. And then they're coming to the design and development team and going, hey, we need it in a week. What's reasonable to get in a week based off what you've heard? And then it's going back to the product owner or the business team and going, okay, listen, we're going to do it in a week, but this is what's going to be missing. This is what's going to be different. This is what's happening. And so they're working more closely together, because the biggest thing is cutting down the time that you guys get off track, mm-hmm. that the development team is doing something that the design team didn't think was supposed to happen, or that the product owner has one vision and like the product starts to diverge from that. Like, you want that, if that's going to happen, like, hopefully it's not longer than a sprint.
Right.
Like, if it's longer than a sprint, then you guys are like, that's a huge waste.
Right. And if you say like, if things change all the time, as we said, then aren't we still doing that, where we're adjusting for?
Yes. But they're smaller adjustments.
Right.
So that's the difference.
That's
like
the
Waterfall says, you're going to spec it all out, right? And then you're going to build that. But that's not taking into account that things do change in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And if the process for changing those things ends up requiring so much sign-off that it takes you a month to actually change direction,
mm-hmm.
then you've just had a month of divergence,
right.
instead of just a week
and
or just a day.
I was meaning in the sense of a sprint that we do, like the between sprints maybe, that you do the, like, kind of, I guess that's just the checking in with the client and seeing what it is.
The two-week review.
Right, and I think I'm just reiterating what it is, right? Like, but if you were to think of it, whereas in, like, you're doing the nucleus of, like, let's say a search feature, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know any iteration of a search will involve X, Y, and Z, and you start working on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it might have been a better structure to do that at startup weekend, where you are going, is this going to be a web app? Yes. So there's
right.
so much involved in that. And then while you're doing that, someone else is. But you don't have the cross-pollination.
This is going to be a kind of interesting thing to develop. It's almost like, this is kind of a divergence, but like a logic tree of like how to figure out what it is you're doing. So like,
mm-hmm.
you have like, so like predefined routes. So if you had like, it's like, what is it? It's a native app. It's like, or like, it's a physical product, or it's an app. And it's like, and then you branch from there. So if it's an app, it's like, is it native or is it web? And it's like, whoop. And it's like, was it a one page app? Is it stateless? Like, it, and you keep like defining until you reach like kind of a more concrete goal. Then like that, and those things all have predefined, like, you know that if you know it's a web app that's a CRUD app, then you know certain things going into.
Loves that
I
word
love
today.
That word.
It's his new favorite word.
I said it once this morning.
Like 12 times.
Right.
In the same
once.
Sentence, I think.
I said it once. You said, who taught the design of the word CRUD?
I'm looking at you, Samir. Well, so what you're describing, though, is exactly what happens if you start telling Jason, me, Samir, the requirements, right? If you start saying, like, oh, like, we need anybody to get it. And it's like, okay, so like, we're not going to be able to do two native apps in the time we have. So you know what? We're going to do mobile web. Wait, are we doing mobile web? Do they need to access it on their phone? No. Okay. We're not doing mobile web. So like, now I know where I'm starting. So we do that stuff. And if you look at the internal project we're doing right now with the Twitter chat app, right? Like, you're building stuff right now. We do not have.
Wait, did we get
the final?
Did we get the listeners to sign an NDA?
By
listening to this podcast, it constitutes signing an NDA.
Yeah,
yeah.
Bleeps and, on anytime we mention that.
And Facebook can use your posts for whatever they want.
Not like they already know.
But yeah, so like we're doing that exact same process, and some of the stuff we're talking about today is kind of saying, we know there are some basic requirements that we haven't talked about yet,
mm-hmm.
that we need to, because you guys can start working on those, like simple layout things. Rick was talking about login and log out, and he was thinking we were going to build that. We were like, come on, Rick, you can crud that up on your own.
It's Bush League, Rick.
So, I mean, we're doing that right now, and we're lucky enough that we're able to work directly with the client in this case, because it's us. Like, so every day someone can be like, hey, Rick, are you doing this?
Answer is usually no. Reddit. What is your, we kind of went on a long path.
Actually, let's get back on with
exactly.
Sean's.
That's what I was
going to
ask.
Yeah.
What'd you build?
Okay, so we started to build an application that would help non-ELL teachers learn how to create lessons that will reach their ELL students, ELL being English language learners. Because right now you have a large number of teachers who have students that are learning English that haven't been taught how to teach to those kids. And so schools have maybe a single expert at a grade level or maybe at a few grade levels that's supposed to assist those teachers. But mm-hmm. there's just never enough time for them to be able to impart all of that knowledge or to be able to build a lesson plan together and say, hey, you need some more supports here. You need to include some more videos, or you need to have your vocab sheet should include some of these words also that you're introducing in this lesson. So we started working on an application to do that. And we actually pivoted. I hate the word pivot. We changed the idea back and forth a number of times for different ways of how to reach English language learners. And we started thinking we were going to go after students and then switched over like teachers are where we should be doing it. And then went back to students and then back to teachers. And we're like, okay, no, seriously, we're doing teachers.
Seriously, startup weekend is over. We need to make a decision.
I can build this, but I need at least more than an hour. That's what we did. And we had a team of three. So it was me, Greg from Urban Arts Partnership, and Vivi from our Medellin office, who was visiting. And then we had a lot of help from one of the coaches at Startup Weekend, who has been an ELL teacher for 15 years.
Is this Daniel?
This is Daniel. And so Daniel reached out to a number of his colleagues so that we could get a lot of validation, a lot of feedback, and also, dialed up the Google Hangout for us to talk to one of the colleagues that he works closely with at his school, and she gave us a lot of really good information, a lot of things that kind of confirmed what Daniel was saying, and then built on them. So that was really helpful.
I'm interested in the change in direction. You said you went from students to teachers,
mm-hmm.
and then back to, you stuck with teachers for the long haul. Can you explain why you initially thought that you wanted to target students?
So the idea that we were going with for targeting students was that the students are the ones that need the supports, right? So the students need maybe additional context for a word or a sentence, or they need something translated, or they're the ones that actually need the supports. And so we thought building something that would directly assist them was going to be where the value could be and the easiest way to do it. But what we quickly realized as we started figuring out how we were going to assist them that, one, there's a few other products out there that do something similar, albeit not very well. And then two, the reason that some of them don't do it very well is because it's very difficult. Like the idea that you want essentially to drop in a master text or some piece of information that the student's supposed to consume, mm-hmm. and that you're going to be able to provide any help that they need without going in and manually adding annotations, manually adding translations, videos, images. It's a really hard problem to automate that, to have the computer do all of that work. And so it just became clear to me the more that we talked about it and spec'd it out and thought about it that it just wasn't going to be possible for Startup Weekend, and that even for us as an organization, if we were going to take it on afterwards, that it would be a very heavy lift. And so that's what kind of pushed us back towards looking at how can we provide teachers with the tools so that they can do the manual work, but that they can do it in the right way, that they can get the assistance they need and the training that they need. So,
and this software is tailored more towards equipping those teachers who don't necessarily have that ELL experience, right? More so than to teachers who already have that experience.
Well, so one of the components of the application is the idea of collaboration. So being able to collaboratively create a lesson plan is huge. And some teachers do that by finding the time to sit down with each other. Mm-hmm. Most teachers don't have that time. And so what they end up doing is, you know, they'll do it in a Google Doc or they'll do it in a Word doc and they'll email it back and forth. And so our thought was, if we make this collaborative and we encourage non-ELL teachers to invite their ELL, I don't want to say better halves, but other halves, into the lesson, then before they're actually teaching it, they can get those supports added in there. And so you could have an ELL teacher come in, look at it and go, oh, hey, this is great. I see what you're doing. You're going to want to consider adding this in. You're going to want to consider adding that in. And that's if the software isn't already providing those suggestions, or maybe it did, but you know, the actual trained person is going to be able to do a better job of differentiating and saying, hey, you know, this video is great, but this one might be even better. So, yeah.
So obviously I know you faced some challenges because you're like a pretty small team. You only had three. So I was trying to help you with design, but it wasn't enough hours in the day. So I know that was something you guys struggled with.
Mm-hmm.
What other challenges did you guys face, and what would you kind of do differently if you had the same idea and the same team kind of moving forward in the future?
I think we would have solidified on our idea sooner. So we went back and forth a few times because we really liked our first idea. But as soon as it became apparent that we weren't going to be able to do it, I think we should have, at that moment, said, okay, this is now dead to us for this weekend.
Yeah.
Not that it's dead to us as an idea, but that it's dead to us this weekend. Let's start moving on the thing that we can do this weekend that is possible. So I would have done that earlier because you need as much time as possible to build this stuff and to research it and to do that. So I think that would have been the single biggest change.
This reminds me of like in like high school or college where your teacher would tell you, this is not the type of project you can start the night before. This is
you're like, wanna bet?
Yeah. Startup weekend is not the type of project you can start on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, or Saturday night, you're finally like at 8 o'clock being like, this is our idea.
Yeah. When Samin and I were talking about it later, we were talking about, like, maybe we probably should have, like, feature locked, even just, like, idea locked, like, around, like, yeah, like, noon
Saturday
or 4 p.m.,
morning.
Like, yeah, like,
yeah.
On Saturday.
Yeah.
But, how, like, so Jason, this was, I don't know, we never revealed the surprise.
We never did.
Oh, and we
this
don't have much
Jason's,
time.
This was Jason's first, yeah, we have just 5 minutes left. We have, this was Jason's very first startup weekend, her first, like, official hackathon, like, in the context of, like, a renting a venue and whatnot, and you won.
Yeah.
Mr. Caesar won.
Yeah, my team actually won. It was, you know, a huge team effort. I couldn't have done it without them. I had a great group of people, especially including Christina from Mobility Labs, too, and, of course, Caesar De La Cruz, who helped out with the initial idea. Trevor provided some hardware when GitHub fell victim to a denial of service attack.
Oh yeah,
that was the greatest.
The
yeah,
it was. Wait, I thought it was a man in the middle attack.
No, all denial of service.
Oh
yeah.
Really?
And I'll describe a little bit of what happened to us on Sunday. We came in with the motivation and idea that we were going to basically get this deployed and get it up on the .co domain that we'd been provided for free.
Mm-hmm.
GitHub stopped working all of a sudden. We couldn't get it on Heroku. We couldn't get the Google App Engine piece to work because we had written in some new Angular front-end functionality. There's a story behind that. We had to pivot because we couldn't just write the back end and get that functioning with dinner at the front end. And so what we did, we pulled together as many resources as we could, everything working on another site and actually managed to get this ready in time for the presentation. And it was just basically, you know, a calamity of errors happening up until that point in terms of the technical side of it. But for the most part, I was actually really, really thrilled to just be working with that awesome team, and I'm really glad that we won. And I really want to see that app take off. I want to see that develop. I want to see it grow, because I told them the first night that I got there that I had very greedy reasons for being on that team. I've got family myself back home in Denver that I want to see go to college, and I want to make sure that they go to the best college that they can, you know, both afford and would basically graduate them at the same time. So I want my family to succeed, of course. Mm-hmm. So that's the big reason why I joined it.
In terms of it growing in the future, you said, or actually, well, the prizes, I know there was some guaranteed interviews with 2 or 3 accelerators.
Yes.
And then also legal consultation from a law group in NYC. I don't know if it's like we were talking about this earlier today, but you haven't gotten the follow-up email for that yet?
I haven't heard back yet.
But, I mean, hopefully, like, you know, like, with maybe, like, either, even if the accelerator, like, you know, like, that app doesn't get accepted into the accelerator program, maybe it's just, like, it's just advice for how it can move forward, or, you know, like, what the steps it needs to take in order to attract some support, either in the form of just, like, in the form of the education sphere, or in support, like, with VCs.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully, I think your app has like some real potential. I think it's really cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that is it. We have to head out.
Let's get out.
Yep.
Oh, we gotta do work now. Well, I could just book this room for another, like, 2 hours.
Yeah. Nah. We should probably, you know, do some.
Oh
work.
No! I lost the whole podcast.
You're just doing all the 4 people yourself.
Just pretend to be all 4 of us. Just get a transcript and then reenact it.
Yep.
So I'm
Sumit.
Sorry.
My name is Sumit. I have a deep voice. I speak 4 languages. Blah, 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 blah.
Hello. I wonder how this is gonna end up being. Pretty deep.
Okay.
Right. That's it.
That's it.
Cut the last part.
Cut Sumit talking.